Hey, Deviants.
Thank you for tuning in to We Say Weird Shit. Welcome into another fun-filled episode of We Say Weird Shit. We are your humble hosts. My name is Dave.
And I'm Liz.
And joining us today is Christy Knubel, or C.A. Knubel, known to her more professional life. How are you today?
I mean, I'm good. I wouldn't say it's like professional, but you know, yeah.
And C.A. C.A. is host of the Ho on the Go podcast. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast and what it's what its main area of expertise is.
So my Ho on the Go podcast is kind of modeled after my book, The Ho Handbook. I wrote in my early and very toxic 20s. It's just tips and tricks I've learned along the way. I teach people to please and be pleasing through sexual and self-empowerment. So, be the baddest bitch you can.
That sounds fun.
That's about it.
Be the baddest bitch you can.
And that's gender neutral, thank you. Bad bitch, big dick energy.
That's right. Hey, nothing wrong with that. So, how long has your podcast been on the air for?
I want to say I started in June. Mm-hmm. Of this year. So, it's only been a couple months.
Yeah. So with that being a couple of months, the popularity aspect of it, have you seen good feedback from your podcast so far?
Yeah, I'd say so. I have a pretty loyal following, you know, on like Spotify and Apple and things like that. When it comes to the live streamed, it's a little more, it's a hit or miss because of the time of day and people have kids and lives, and it's hard to kind of pinpoint one time where people can be in it and on it. It was working well at 8:30 for a while, but as long as, because I do it twice a week, you know, I think I just need to switch up the dynamic with the times, kind of play with it. I just haven't had time to sit and go over it because I have another project that's coming out in like 10 days. So
yeah,
we'll get there.
Project coming out in 10 days. Oh God, enlighten us on this project that you have coming up in 10 days.
Yeah, so I have a project. It's called the Mentally Kills Project. It's a mental health informational podcast and page that is basically makes it a little easier to digest when it comes to mental health. It brings it to, well, I don't want to say a more modern aspect because there's no modern way to say that you're kind of a little crazy. But it just kind of gives you an in-depth look at symptoms and causes and possible treatments and coping mechanisms. And as well as the page itself has interviews with people all over the world who have either different mental health conditions or different medical professionals, therapists, advocates, you name it. I've been doing this since May, so I'm pretty excited. And I'm going to do the suicide prevention walk October 2nd, and that's the day I'm going to live stream and publish it. So
that is freaking awesome. I think more people need to get into, or at least, you know, bring mental health out into the open so we can find ways to, you know, better it. And, you know, there's never going to be a cure, but we need to find a way to learn to live with it and, you know, channel it into. And I hate to say the word normalcy or even normal because there's really no such thing as the word normal.
Absolutely.
When it comes down to it. When my normal is, it might not be your normal, you know. Mm-hmm. Liz's normal is completely different than mine, you know. And, you know, so like I guess the word normal, I fucking hate using that shit so much, but that's what the point I was trying to get. Feel right, feel level, I guess would be the right way to say it.
Comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, comfortable. Because I mean, if you can identify with the fact that you may have mental illness, you know, it's something hard to live with. You know?
Oh, I know.
And finding healthy ways to channel that is a lot more rewarding. So kudos to you for that. And you said that's starting in 10 days. Is that when it's airing, or is it airing shortly after?
So I already recorded the entire first season because it is an informational podcast. It's not really a show. It's just more to give you information, and it's kind of going hand in hand with the page. Now, the page itself, it's already, I've been adding to it since May. It has different albums with different like memes and quotes and like infographs that I've made with different triggers and different coping mechanisms, just any kind of information you could possibly think for each different mental health condition. Thank you, Pinterest. You've been a giant help. Shout out. but yeah, it's everything is already on there. The only thing that is not on the page yet is number one, people, because it's not published, but also the interviews. I'm going to be releasing them one at a time. I was originally uploading them to the page as I went along, but then I realized that the videos were showing up in people's feed. So people were watching them before I was ready for them to see them. And I was like, oh, God. So I had to go back and like panic and definitely, I went and took them down and I scheduled their broadcasts. Mm-hmm. So the page itself is already made. It's just not published yet.
Right.
Well, public, I should say.
When you publish the page, are you going to release like each section as you release each episode of your podcast? Are you going to release the entire thing at once? Are you doing it in weekly?
So that I'm still kind of going back and forth with, because I have it all recorded and all of the albums are on there already, but I did kind of like the element of doing it one at a time. However, what I wanted my page to be is a one-stop shop, and I think I just got to hold true to my original idea, which is just to lay it all on you real thick at once. People can spend hours on that page as soon as I drop it, you know? But the first line on the page is welcome home. Yeah. And I like that for a reason. I want them to feel at home there, you know? And there's going to be people in the comments on the pictures like, oh, I have this symptom too. And then there's going to be another one. It's like, oh, I have this symptom too. Next thing you know, I'm like on a magazine getting interviewed because I am now a matchmaker for crazy people. Like, you know, like it could be romantic. But no, it's just to bring people together. And I think because I have more that I'm already working on for the next section of my podcast for it, I think I'm just going to lay it all on them. And as far as the interviews go, those I will release probably one a week. Just to let people get a grasp on what I've got before I start throwing more at them. Plus, I'm sure, as you guys know, when it comes to interviews and stuff, when it comes to medical, there's some forms that need to be filled out, some permissions and all that fun stuff. So I want to make sure everything is tight, like tighter than I am, you know, before I launch that part. So October 2nd, when I go live, it's just going to say like, hey, go take a look. Here's the sister podcast. You guys knew it was coming because my page, they do know. I've been working on this since May. I was originally supposed to drop it in July, but I had a few foundations that I was working with that I was hoping to partner with before the launch. But I don't have time to wait for people. So ship sailed, you know. I'm working on the next season now.
Which I'm definitely looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to not having to worry about it anymore. the only thing I will have to worry about when I do launch it is I am going to have a live every Tuesday. It's going to be Talk It Out Tuesdays, where people can come on and they can kind of, you know, hash it out, talk it out. Not like your ex-girlfriend, ex-boyfriend. Like, we're not doing all that. I just mean like people like, hey, I don't feel all right now. Is there anybody watching this live right now? Or is there anybody who's live or anybody who wants to listen to me right now? and that person will be me. So,
Well, fuck yeah. So you heard it here first, everybody. Every Tuesday, man, go over to her page and join her live. This shit's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Now, going back to the memoir that you wrote when you were 20, in your 20s, I'm sorry. So let's touch a little bit on that. What was that all about? Was that from a place of, like, you said toxicity. So yeah. Was it from a place of like hatred, or was it from like a place of like, you know, just like, you know, home life? Where'd we go with that memoir?
So I actually wrote it because I'm an attempted murder survivor. And when that kind of happened, I lost my whole identity. I had just turned 18. It was insane, you know, to even think about now, it's still insane. But at that time, it was just like, I did not respect or value men at all. None of them, not my family, not nobody. And honestly, it's something that I still struggle with often. I am very intimidating to men. And I don't say that to like toot a horn or anything. I say that because they tell me like, you are kind of aggressive and intimidating. You know, and I'm going like, yeah, tell your friends, you know, but that's like, that's not a compliment, Chris, you know? Yeah. But it's going through my life in my 20s as this like traumatized. And that's why I say toxic, because a lot of my behaviors were like very, very demeaning and diminishing to men. So I wrote this book. And it wasn't even really like a memoir. It was more like anything I learned along the way, I wrote down in a little notebook or on my notepad, whatever I had on me, I would write it down. And these collection of notes I put into an actual book to give out to people. Like, this is your hoe handbook. Mm-hmm. This is how to be a hoe and stop treating these men with respect and, you know, like treat yourself with respect instead, you know? And it's a good read. It still is. I look over it sometimes to remind myself, you know, sometimes I got to step back into that energy because, I'd be letting men walk all over me sometimes. And, you know, I let a bald guy make me cry. That's when I had to go back to my hoe handbook and consult. Like, that man couldn't even grow hair. And he made me cry. Like, I'm the baddest bitch I know. And a bald guy made me cry. That's not okay.
Well, you know what? Bald people suck anyway. I mean, just saying. Yeah. Like, that's all you got to remember. Like, If they were cool, why the fuck they lose their hair?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
What was the coolest things about the Fonz? His fucking hair, right? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, my hairline's been in recession since 2008, but I still can grow it on top, and I'm pretty happy about that.
It's definitely not thinning towards the back.
Definitely not. She likes to tell me that my hair is thinning, you know, just to kind of get under my skin. And it does.
That's her job. I ain't gonna lie. That's her job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Going back to you like to read your hoe handbook from the 20s because you missed that energy. I'll be honest with you. Like, I liked a lot of things about myself in my 20s, but I hated a lot of things about myself in my 20s as well. As somebody who's 40 now, like, I look back at my 20s, and I'm like, man, why the fuck did I make that decision? You know, or why, you know, why did I do this? Why did I do that? But you sounded pretty sure of yourself back then. You just had a pretty distaste in the male gender.
So here's the thing.
Would
I
that
was
be correct?
Absolutely sure of myself. You could say that. Yeah, you are correct in that way. But what I thought was myself was actually just a ball of trauma responses and not me as a person. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. When something traumatic, like what happened to me, happens to someone, you lose your entire identity. And I lost that at a time where people are just starting to discover who they are individually. I had just turned 18. I had just left home. You know, I had just gone to college. I went 2 hours away, you know. I was feeling like bad bitch energy because I'm like, I'm going to fuck everybody. I don't have a bedtime. No curfew. You know, I'm getting drunk on a Wednesday. Like, my mom wasn't there, you know, like, I was ready to fucking. Yeah. But then that happens and you kind of just like, who even am I now? You know, you don't even have a sense of self. So throughout my 20s, you know, doing these, let's say, demeaning behaviors towards men, and what I even did just to survive basically was just that. It was surviving. So what I thought was what I wanted in life and who I was in life was not me at all. Bits and pieces, of course, because we take our light with our dark, and I am still toxic to some degree. So, you know, at least I can admit that. But I actually really discovered myself now, you know, getting diagnosed this year and really working on my mental health and getting that kind of under wraps and writing my trauma narrative and, yeah, rewriting my whole handbook in a way that it should be. A little less toxic.
I mean, that's really our whole goal anyway, is to not be so toxic, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day. But then there's people out there that just, they don't give two shits about who the fuck they is. It's all them, all about them. And that's at the, you know, at the end of the day, it's number one. But my problem with that is like, it comes down to taking ownership and taking responsibility for one's actions. You know, when it comes to the nitty gritty of things, you cannot do anything without the support of others. So if you are one to, you know, just be all about yourself, you're not gonna make it very far in life. Which sucks, you know, because there's nobody that's just self-made, you know, that never happens. So, you know, I've kind of learned that, you know, throughout my life and everything, because like you, I in my 20s, I was a pretty fucked up person. And it started with, you know, Liz is my third wife. I was married twice in my 20s. And, you know, without Liz and her support and everything, like, I really, really took a long time to ask her to marry me, because I didn't want to make that same mistake that I made in my 20s. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to get married again. You know, if two people didn't fucking want this, why the fuck would anybody else want it? You know what I mean?
I can see that. I can see you getting that mindset.
Right. You know.
But I think that that's one of the reasons why our relationship works, is because we were a little bit later when we got together, you know.
Yeah.
In your 20s, you're still trying to figure yourself out. And I mean, you're still growing up. And, you know, we got together when we were, what, 32? So, you know.
And we, that goes back to what I was saying about the support of others, you know, is Liz supports everything I do, and I support everything Liz does. I didn't have that in my 20s, which made me a much more toxic person, so to speak, because I was all about this guy.
I was going to say, it's kind of funny, because the way that I was raised by my mom and my grandma was basically to hate men. Like, you don't trust men. You use men to get, like, what you need. My grandma told me, like, don't ever get married, because you can leave when you're done. And I kind of took that upbringing and kind of, like, went, like, completely boy crazy.
I think
you can ask Dave, like, my mom was very demeaning towards men, and because that's the way we were raised, to just, we don't trust men. We just use them for our own personal gain. And so,
I mean, for me, it was kind of the same way, because that's kind of how my mom was. She was a single mother, she had three children, but it wasn't like, you know, use the men or anything like that. It was just like, you don't ever need a man. And I haven't. I've never depended on a man to pay for anything. I get uncomfortable when men pay for dinner. That's why I don't do dates. That's why I'm a hoe. I'll pay for myself, you know? But my mom was the same way, you know, like, you don't need no men. Don't worry about them for nothing. Don't even, you know, and, you know, even still, I still picked some pretty shitty men. I just didn't marry them, because I was never willing to bet somebody 50% of my stuff that they'll love me forever. I am very irritating. That is a big challenge.
Well, at least you can admit that, right? I mean, not a lot of people can. They just jump right into it. hence the reason I had two wives. So you spoke a little bit before about an attempted murder survivor. So if you don't mind me asking, how did that, like, what happened?
So I went to college a couple hours away from home. It's in the Poconos, you know. I have my little crappy Nokia phone, but I used to spend a lot of time outside of the library by myself. I still spend, if I go to a library, like, I tell any man who comes in my area, like, if you take me to a library or some kind of bookstore, you either better have a fat ass wallet or nothing to do for the rest of the day. Because me and books, we got a love relationship, mm-hmm. Okay? But I used to sit outside because there was a coffee shop also right next door. So I'd get my coffee, do my homework, whatever the case may be. Apparently, and I'm going to say this because at the time I had no idea, but obviously he told me everything during the situation, so I'll give it to you. You'll have more information going through it than I did. He had gotten a flat tire on campus. I don't know what he was doing there, but he saw me and noticed that I was not on my phone a lot, wasn't checking my phone, and did not have people around me. I wasn't, like, waving to people, wasn't very sociable. So to him, that meant I was a very easy target. And over the next 6 months, kind of just built an acquaintance. I'd see him all the time with books, you know, coming in and out of the library or in and out of the coffee shop. We'd make small talk about the weather, about family, about random stuff. And, you know, after those 6 months went by, it was kind of cold outside. It wasn't still winter. I know it was kind of like, I want to say it was like leaning towards spring when this happened, but I'm not entirely sure of the timeline because my brain. He had offered me a ride home, and I didn't see it as a big deal because I've been seeing this person like damn near every day for 6 months. You know, I know his name. I know his family. He's told me everything. Like, how could he possibly be a danger? I mean, he was nothing but a danger because instead of turning down the road to go to my school, he decided to go to the highway instead. And it started a 6 hour long car ride of basically fighting and screaming and arguing and trying to convince a man who was clearly unhinged to let me go. That someone was looking for me, that I had value, my life had value. And there's literally nothing worse than trying to convince someone that you're worth staying alive. Horrible. Honestly, for me, like, even with everything else that happened, that is the part that really, really hurts the most. Like, I had to beg a man for my own life, you know? So I think that's where a lot of my issues with men come from. Like, I don't ask you for nothing. I'm not begging you to stay. I'm not nothing. You can just go. And, you know, that's kind of where that comes from, according to my therapist. So beyond that, he kept pulling off onto this like guardrail road, kind of in the Poconos where it's just dirt and it kind of goes up to the woods, but you can see over the cliff, like that kind of thing. Yeah. He pulled off once or twice the first time, but when he tried to pull me out of the car, I was not having it. I was 5'2", fuck around and find out. Okay. I was kicking, punching, all the nine, aggressive. And that's how I am. I'm very aggressive if I get in that defensive mode. So after the first and second time, you know, by the second time he got back on the highway, that's when he started pulling out his member and trying to, you know, make my hand grab it, things like that. And I was not having it. So I literally grabbed the wheel to this car and just yanked it. And that kind of like, you know, I think he realized at that point, like, I will crash this car and kill us both before I touch your ding-a-ling. And I say ding-a-ling to bring humor into it. So it's okay to laugh at that point. That's kind of how I deal with it. But, you know, like, I would rather die. So after that, he kind of went to the same road. And I could tell, like, he was just done at this point. Again, it had been about 6 hours by this point. I am a lot to handle, especially when I'm upset. And I do not back down easily. So by the third attempt, when he went to get out of the car, he had a weapon. And at that point, I was like, well, Chris, you gave it a good run, hon. Let's go. Like, you know, like, I had sealed in my head, like, that was it. You know, at least I gave him a hard time, you know. And I'd still planned on fighting more. Like, I'd planned on leaving, like, several marks on this man. Because, like, if I'm going down, like, you're going down in some way, too. Even if it's Lorena Bobbitt style and I only take like an inch off your dick, like I'm doing it. We're doing something here. So we went back into the woods and I don't know how far back it was because there's just bits and pieces of this point even after, you know, like my trauma narrative was finished that I don't know. Not fully. That's something, and that's the reason why the last part of my mental health podcast isn't recorded yet, because it's this full story of what happened in full detail. But there are some things that I'm still trying to figure out. I know that there was violence in this part. There was knife play. There was some blood. And I remember just laying there and just kind of just not even there. It was kind of like a villain story after that, because this is where he told me how he targeted me, how he didn't go to my school, how, you know, like he knew I'd be an easy target. So where I'm already feeling literally like I'm nothing, he had to like take it that next step to say, well, this is how stupid you are too. You know, because up until this point, I'm like, oh my God, I trusted this guy, da da da. Like, he didn't even go to my school. So it made it like even worse for me to think about going back. Now, at the time, something happened and I don't remember exact details. I just remember a noise and then I remember finding the road and I walked home. That's what I remember. There is a little more, but there's certain details I don't want to give out just yet until I launch that episode, for reasons. But honestly, it for me, until I did my trauma narrative this year, I didn't tell anybody. And the reason that I didn't tell anybody was because in my head, all I remembered was getting kidnapped and walking home. I remembered nothing in the middle. So to me, I was embarrassed. Number one, I couldn't trust with my brain the way it was that anything I was saying was accurate. Was that his name? Did he say that? Was he here every day? I couldn't trust anything I was thinking at that point because I was so lost in my head. And beyond that, it was just kind of like, I can't tell my mother that as an 18-year-old woman, she just let go away to school, that I got kidnapped and I was dumb enough to like get in somebody's car. You know, like I couldn't do that. You know, my mom is, like I said, very don't depend on nobody. You can do it. Independent, strong, independent woman. So I couldn't go to my mom and just be like, hey, by the way, like got kidnapped, you know, I wanted to tell my mother. That's the one person emotionally for women. We want somebody to emotionally connect with us. And I know from my own knowledge that my mom has been through some stuff. Not to the same degree, thank God, but, you know, I feel like she would have maybe understood me a little better. But instead, I decided to just keep drinking a lot, and it just destroyed me mentally. I was not even a person up until maybe this year. It caused a lot of psychological damage when I did not speak out about what happened or address it. And I did not address it. I had two jobs, a kid. I left college. I came home. I couldn't be up there anymore. Like I felt like he would find me and finish the job, you know? And after that, I started sewing holes in my bras for knives and carrying knives with me and just doing all those PTSD things that aren't really normal, you know? It's one thing to carry a knife with you if you live in like Philadelphia, you know, where it's dangerous, you might need a knife, but there it was not necessary. And it was definitely, it was sickening. Some of the things that I did as a result, but to answer questions before they're asked, I did not report it to anybody. He may still be out there, but I am also divinely protected, and I promise he has probably gotten his by now. I didn't learn about the assault and the knife play and all of that until this year when I did my trauma narrative. That unlocked recessed memories and kind of took me from that's embarrassing to damn, bitch, okay, you did that. Go, girl. You know, it kind of flips your entire perspective. So I know it's kind of deep to get into, but I tried to keep it like a little brief so it's not too, you know, heavy.
Oh, no. I asked the question. That's what we wanted. So I appreciate you sharing that information with us. You know, it's not easy to talk about subjects like that, you know. So for that, we applaud you. And definitely... fucking badass, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah, good on you, kid. And yeah.
The whole wheel thing, especially, like, I was like, we could both die, babe. We in here. Like, I look back at it like, damn, bitch, you're nuts, you know?
Yeah, good on you. That's for real. Like,
thank you.
Because, you know, with you not remembering the events until it was, you know, that is a actual trauma response. It'll throw you into almost like amnesia where you just don't fucking remember at all.
Yeah.
And so, some people get it unlocked in different ways. Some people use hypnotherapy. Some people use, you know, just regular, like regular old therapy. But either way, it deep dives into pieces into your brain to where you can just be like, wow.
Yeah.
This is what happened to me. I am so fucking glad I'm the person I am for, you know, you made it out. I mean, you could have easily not.
I could have stayed where I was even after he left.
So good on you.
I could have.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
But I'm that bitch. So,
yeah. So I mean.
I'm kidding. I have to bring some kind of humor into it because it's a pretty, like, you know, serious topic. But yeah, mm-hmm. You're right. For me, it was writing my trauma narrative that really unlocked those memories for me. It's really just writing it over and over again.
Yeah.
And it took me a lot to recover when I finally finished it. Mm-hmm. So, because you really just relive it.
So,
again.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So cause and effect goes into play hand in hand. And the trauma response that you had was to basically, and I'm not saying this in a mean way or anything like that, but more of a, you know, disrespect any man because of that. Is that correct?
Yeah. I had no respect for men after that. None. Yeah. And it was like on the border for that to begin with, you know, because I was raised. So that just like took it to that next level. Yeah. To be fair, when I say that, I still had a certain level of respect for my dad and my grandfather. Like, there were very select few that I, like, still had love and respect for. But they're not people that I was around all the time where they needed to see the other side when I wasn't. You know, because it was... Right. I have borderline personality disorder, so I think in black and white, you're either the hero of my story or you're the villain. And you need to die because we're mortal enemies. And then it'll flip-flop every 30 seconds or 3 days. You never know. So they weren't around for those moments where they weren't the hero in my story, you know? But they didn't realize, like, you were the literally only people that I respected enough to become a hero in my story during that period of my life, you know? Mm-hmm. Even the men that I had relationships with, they were beneath me, and I knew it. And I reminded them constantly. And that's horrible to do to somebody. Why did I do that? Because somebody did that to me. And that's not okay. You know, that's just the behaviors that I learned. And sometimes I still catch myself doing it.
No, but, you know, when it comes back down to it, I mean, there are a lot, and I'm not saying all men, but there are a lot of men who believe, whether they're in a relationship with somebody or they're just crushing on somebody or whatever, that they own that person in a manner of speaking. And that is, to be honest, one of the most disrespectful things anybody can do. So you had a right to feel that way because in your experience, it sounds to me like this guy thought he owned you. You know, he spent so much time grooming with you. He spent, you know, he fed you all these lies and then just one day he fucking snapped, you know, but it was planned. It was a planned thing. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, your response was appropriate. And it's unfortunate that people can be that way, you know?
Yeah.
I'm of sound mind to believe that there's a lot of traits where I might, a lot of things about myself where I might act a little bit chauvinistic or misogynistic or anything, but I'm like, you know, I'm probably one of the biggest bitch men you'll ever meet in your life.
Redacted. Redacted.
Like, No, but like, you know, I am not a misogynist, but I make misogynistic jokes, you know, or, you know, something like that. But I, you know, it's all in good humor and stuff like that. I don't mean anything I fucking say. And if anybody believes me, I will retract myself and I'll be like, you know what? I'm so sorry I made you feel that way. That's not me. I was just being silly, you know?
Yeah. He hates it because I'll say stuff like, oh, I'll go do the dishes because I'm the woman and that's my job. And he's like, stop saying that.
That's cute. I don't believe in gender roles, you know? Which is 100% why I think Liz should have taken the trash out on Wednesday. Just saying.
I was in my jammies. I wasn't going to go out to the curb like that. So
I go to Walmart like that. Only Walmart, though.
Yeah, so the trauma response from that led into your... distaste of men. And then where did you go from there? As far as your lifestyle and everything like that.
If you want me to give you an honest answer, it didn't go anywhere. I was stuck down a rabbit hole. I wasn't even like really a person. It was more just a series of escapism and toxic behaviors and, you know, where I thought, and I am a good person, you know, I'm not a terrible person, even when I was being toxic. It's just more like I wasn't who I normally would be in respect to how I treated the people around me, the situations I put myself in, you know, the drinking, there was drug usage, there's just stuff that I shouldn't and wouldn't have been doing. You know, because I was like the gifted child, you know, I was an overachiever. I graduated with scholarships and, you know, grants and all this other stuff to go to school. And it was just to my family, they didn't know what happened and nobody would make the time to listen. So it was just like, well, she just became an alcoholic and a waste of life, basically. And that's how I felt. And I believed it. And that was the problem, because I'm not, obviously. I just wasn't honest, and I shouldn't even need to be, you know, to expect my family to feel like I'm worth something. And that's not to say that they don't think I'm worth anything. I just mean in respect to the behaviors and things that I was doing. And for that, they're not entirely wrong. I was way smarter than that, you know, to do those kinds of things. And basically what I did was avoidant behavior. Even though I had my son, I worked two jobs, so I'd stay busy. You know, when I didn't work my two jobs, I was with my kid. When I wasn't with my kid and he was asleep, I was inviting people over. I was never alone because when I was alone, I would have those intrusive thoughts. Like, you need to sit and deal with this. Like, there was literally somebody inside me screaming like, yo, do something about this. Like, am I not going to get any justice in here? You know, that's exactly how it felt. And it got to me to a point that in August of 2020, I was like, no, I'm done doing this. You know, I'm going to start seeing a therapist and I'm going to work on this. You know, I didn't want to have men sleep over because I was afraid I'd have a night terror. I didn't want to have to explain that. It's embarrassing. You know, it's why you do that whole lifestyle. Never spend the night, you know, which is always a good thing to do anyway, because you shouldn't be spending the night at people's houses. Go home. You pay them bills, go home. But that's just a joke. But, you know, I started seeing a therapist. We started, you know, really getting into it. And it was the first time over that month, I think it was about a month and a half that I was seeing her, 6 weeks, six appointments, that we started going into it. I finally told her, from what I remembered, the full story, you know, and her explaining, like, what happens to my brain because I didn't deal with it for, let's say, 10 to 12 years by that point. She was real with me. You know, some of the damage probably cannot be undone. But your symptoms can be manageable because she didn't know it either at the time, but I have other mental health conditions that make my, what is now CPTSD, worse. At the time, it was just PTSD. CPTSD is just complex PTSD. It's just more symptoms. It's just a little more extreme. That happened because 6 weeks after I started talking to my therapist and diving into my trauma, my 18-year-old sister died unexpectedly. And she was the closest person to me and my family. and it devastated me. Like my brain just shut down. I was like disassociating. I don't remember the next 2 years up until April of this year. And that's because I made an attempt on my life. I literally had a heart attack the week before by, you know, using drugs to try to overdose. And the week after, I ended up in the hospital, thankfully, for a second chance because I should be dead. But you know what?
Well,
it was necessary.
My condolences about your sister, by the way.
Yeah.
It must have been tough. And, you know, being so young, too, that's just not fair, you know?
And I think for me, it kind of triggered a bigger response because she died right after she turned 18. And that was the same age I was when my trauma happened. You know, so it was like a double hit for me, you know, because then I had some kind of guilt that made no sense. Like, I survived, but did I have to sacrifice a future sister I didn't know about? Like, that's the kind of crazy stuff I was thinking in my head. That's the kind of like thoughts you have when you have survivor's guilt, you know? But that's what my head was wrapping around. I was like, no, like, maybe if I go, you know, she'll come back. Maybe, you know, like, it'll tip the scales and, like, crazy stuff. But, yeah, it was just, it really threw me off. Really, I mean, I'm still a little thrown, so.
You know, the human brain is a very malleable thing, and it's unfortunate that trauma will respond in almost nonsensical thought processes, you know? And, you know, it sounds like up until that point, you've been through a lot. So I don't want to go down this whole large, dark section of the podcast here. So I am going to lighten the mood a little bit and ask you about, I am going to lighten the mood and kind of ask about something that you stated earlier, just a little minute detail. Explain what the fuck a hoe lifestyle is.
All right. So this kind of plays in. Now, to be fair, my trauma is not the only reason that I do this lifestyle. It's also because I have a personality disorder. I tend to get obsessively fixated on people if I take an interest in them. It may not last long. It could be a whole day. But that whole day, I am literally Googling and searching and finding every tidbit of information that I can on this person. I have no idea why. I don't even know why when I'm in the moment that I do it. But because of that, and because, you know, relationships that I've been in that just did not come to meet my standards, I was like, no men will ever meet my standards. So guess what? I will use you like toys, and then you will go home. So I have my roster, and it's always been that way. The people on the roster change, of course, throughout the years, but it's always the same structure. It is obviously a mix. I'm bisexual, so there are guys and girls, but everybody has a specific job that they do for me and that I do for them. We have an agreement. We sign an NDA. Mm-hmm. You don't talk to me outside of scheduling. You do not have me on social media. We do not follow each other. We are not friends. I don't want to know about you. I do not care. You don't need to know about me. Worry about yourself. I don't answer questions. If I do, it's a lie because it's none of your business. And they usually are pretty up there. Pretty on point with that. It's the women that sometimes give me an issue. Emotionally driven creatures, man, I gotta tell you. You know.
Oh, you know, men are more predisposed to just want to fuck.
Yes.
Whereas women get attached.
Yeah, I noticed.
You know.
So, but yeah, it's kind of what it is. It was non-attachment. It was like sleeping around, but not sleeping around because it's the same people. You know, they're safe. You guys are, you have some kind of sexual trust because I don't have a romantic attachment to sex at all. None. Like, even when I was in relationships, there's no romantic attachment to it. And in my relationships, I tend to have trouble in that department because you're trying to build a foundation for a relationship of trust and love, all that romantic, cutesy, fartsy shit. But I can't do that and have sex with them. So that's usually ends up being the problem, which why I just keep to myself. But with my roster, it's like the only time that I don't hit up my roster is during Hot Girl Summer, because that's when I need to go and spread my legs to spread knowledge. I need to go, you know, learn some new things and get some new experiences under my belt and go topless on somebody's yacht, which didn't happen this year. And I'm very disappointed about it. But that's really being a hoe. It's just kind of, you know, just always making sure you got yourself, you're good. You don't need anybody. You don't depend on anybody. And you use people sexually for what you want. And they're using you for the same reason. So it's a mutual understanding. Again, with the high five, pat on the ass. See you next time, champ. And you walk out the door. That's it. You're there to release an energy or get tension out. And then you just dip. And I have had no problems with moving my life this way.
Hey, if that's what makes you happy, man. You know, I'm all about the you do you lifestyle. Liz and I are a bit more monogamous. She has, without even asking, she has told me on numerous occasions, I don't share. And I'm like,
respect.
I don't either. So, hey, win-win.
No, I don't share either. Like my roster is my roster.
Hey, that's fair. So would it be safe to say that you kind of treat that as your relationship in a broader
say in a way that it's definitely like a relationship for me.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that's so I kind of look at that when you say when you say that, like, I don't share, that's yours, you know. That's what you do. I mean, there's people that are in a polyamory. There's people that are in open relationships, and that's what they're in. But, you know, you are cool with the fact that this is just what you do. And, I'm glad you found yourself, because not many people do. You know, some people, I'm still trying to figure myself out sexually. Liz and I, we've been exploring a little bit, you know. It's done great, you know. We've had some new experiences, and she's done some vibrating on the bed because of it.
Air five, bro. Air five.
The click was so cheesy.
It was. Yeah,
that was the point.
That's like, it reminds me of one of those guys who's like, oh, she would never fake it. I would be able to tell.
Yeah.
I can tell, though.
That was the point.
I literally test myself in the weirdest ways. Like, I'll sit and watch a porn by myself, not to have sex to it, but to see if I could tell if she's really faking it or not. You know, or like the girl squirting. Is that real or is that pee? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, I'm sitting here and I'm watching. Because I'm like, nobody will ever fake nothing with me. Nothing. You know? That's an insult, I feel like. Like, for me, I'm not going to fake you for a man. I'll tell you you're trash. You get one chance to fix it or I'm leaving. I don't care what stage of sex we're in. I will leave.
Yeah.
Oh, man, yeah. And, like, Liz asked me one time, she was like, you don't want, like, a three-way, do you? And I was like, why? I already disappoint the shit out of you. Why would I want to disappoint two people?
Crazy. That's so crazy.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah,
You do what you got to do when you say weird shit, right?
That's true. It is called We'd Say Weird Shit. I think this has taken many different turns in this conversation. Right. We went from like a whole therapy session to like sex.
Oh, I fucking love it.
I love it too.
I fucking love it.
But yeah, I mean, my experience played a lot into writing the hoe handbook, so it's valid.
Mm.
But it's just
so you fun. Have. So you said you've pulled the book. And you're kind of redoing it a little.
Yeah. So the book, I mean, it's not like it was a bestseller. Nobody knew it existed. Nobody's looking for a hoe handbook. And I wasn't really advertising it, you know? It was just me. I did it basically publishing-wise just to say, like, I did it for me. Because I love reading. I love books. And I've always wanted to be an author. Is that the story I wanted to tell? No. My trauma narrative is going to be my actual story. Because there's a lot more in the background and foreground and all around that, you know, led to me being who I am now, which is a gift to mankind, but also a menace. So, but I took it out of publication because when I really sat and read it over too, it was just like, why? Like, why is this in here? You know, like some things were valid, other things, it was just like, this is just really demeaning and really toxic. And this is not advice. You're just mad. Like, scratch, scratch, you know? This is just you being rude to men, scratch, scratch. Like, no, you can't do that, scratch, scratch. Like, this is not even legal, scratch, scratch, you know? Just little toxic crazy babies. And I'm like, all right, this is definitely an early 20-year-old wrote this book, you know? And now I'm 30, I can go back and go, all right, let me fix this a little bit. And now I'm going to relaunch it next year. So I'm working on that now.
You know we're going to get a copy of it,
as
right?
You should.
When it relaunches.
I'll even sign it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. We love that
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I'm really excited about relaunching it.
So you should be. I mean, not a whole lot of people on the earth right now can say they're published authors.
That's true.
And I mean, you know, that in itself is to be, you know, something to be proud of. I mean, I don't give a shit if you wrote the Satanic Bible. You know, you did more than me. I've never wrote a book, you know. But like, you know, and what's cool about doing this podcast is we actually run into a lot of authors.
Interesting.
And yeah, and it's like they've really given us some really cool books. Like yeah. I actually got one right here. There was a gentleman who was on our show. He wrote this book, Tried to Be Straight. Yeah. He grew up in a conservative world as a gay man and didn't know he was gay until he was in his, what, 30s, babe?
Yeah. And he said he's like, I do sleep with a lot of men for being a straight guy. And so just
yeah.
kind of realized.
Yeah. You and I get to meet so many cool people that have written these cool ass, you know, like books, and like nobody gets to know who they are. And I think more people should be reading shit like this, you know? So
yeah,
we definitely want a copy of that Ho Handbook.
Okay.
I was going to say it's definitely been more interesting than like, you know, the bestsellers. And like, don't get me wrong, I love Stephen King, but reading, you know, these books that we're, you know, meeting authors and everything, it's more fun. It's more interesting.
It's real.
It's deeper than just, you know, that bestseller you go. Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. I love the books that
And that's why I've been asking you a lot about your book, because like, you know, more people need to hear that you have a book and that it will be coming out next year.
Yeah.
And that you know, whether it's toxic or not toxic or anything like that, somebody's going to find it useful. And, you know, if we can reach one person, we've done our job, right?
That's right. Yeah. And I think I will go a little bit harder with the book itself. It's just right now with the mental health aspect really coming into full play in front of me. That's my biggest, it's what makes what happened to me full circle. So I don't want to move on to that yet because I'm not going to give it the attention that it should have. And I don't do anything half-assed. So, you know, it's all or nothing with me. No gray area.
No, she goes in balls deep.
All the way.
She goes in balls full deep.
Run.
Full ass.
Full fist.
All the way. She takes that shit all the way to the back of the throat. Fuck yeah.
That's right. No gag reflex here.
All right.
So. But yeah, I think too, for the whole mental health thing, until I have that situated, for me, it doesn't really feel like I've closed that chapter yet. Mm-hmm. So. I can't move on until it's closed. Because kind of like when I'm in an argument with somebody, like until there's some kind of resolution, the argument is still going. Like we will continue, which is also toxic, by the way, I might add. So.
You say toxic. I say waffles are way better than pancakes.
What?
This is an ongoing argument Liz and I have.
It's like the only argument we ever have.
I think they're both like the same.
I was
one
waiting
has
for
pockets.
Her to chime in. and crispier.
That depends on how you make them. If you put too much butter or you put syrup on it, it's the same amount of soggy as a pancake.
Yeah, fuck that. Well, who's doing that? You might as well just make a pancake.
Well, some people don't put syrup on their pancakes, and it's the same kind of flaky as a waffle. I'm fucking his whole head off right now.
Well, those people should burn in hell.
She's just sitting there like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm team pancake because I like the sogginess of it. So,
I like the pockets. They just hold the syrup in place, you know?
They're too hard to butter.
Your face is too hard to butter.
Well,
she prefers cream anyway.
Write that one down in my journal.
She prefers cream anyway.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
But we've come to a little over an hour now, so I'm just gonna go ahead and say that we really appreciate you being on our show. We'd normally like to give our guests a five to ten second note. Go ahead, take as much time as you need. Let us know what's happening next. If you're doing any kind of like live shows, aside from the ones we've already covered. But if you're doing anything like that, if you want to throw out your socials or whatever you want to do, the stage is yours. Take it away.
Thanks. So I hope you mean socials isn't like social media, because my social security number, I got that on wraps. But what I was going to say is, if you're in the Philly area, I do have a show at the Kelly Center this Saturday. I also have a show on the 30th in Sicklerville, New Jersey. And another one in Philadelphia on the 2nd or 4th of October. I'd have to double check. But if anybody's going to City Hall in Philadelphia for the Suicide Awareness Walk, you will find me there going live stream to launch my, not just my website, but also my podcast to go with it, my mental health project. And I go live every Tuesday and Thursday on YouTube and Facebook. And you can find me on any social media. Just like my name says, C.A. Knubel. C.A. Knubel.
C.A. Knubel. All right. Now, again, we want to thank you so much for being on our program. You have been a lovely guest, and we'd love to have you back in a few months. Until then, we are your humble hosts. My name is Dave.
And I'm Liz.
And we will see you next week.
See ya.